Paul Mayer's Children's Television Archive.
Where were you born?
I really was born. I was born in New York City. And then when I was very small, we moved to Springfield, Massachusetts. And then in Kansas City, Missouri, and then San Francisco. And
you,
I might say my career.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, we just were there for a few months. But I mean, I might as well say that San Francisco started, I started my career, everything there. I worked in the last fringes of radio. Terrible word, fringes, but I mean the big shows, the big era was
before
that.
How did you make your first break? What got you into
radio? Auditioned, and I auditioned for a program, wait a minute, called Professor Puzzlewit. It was a Sunday program, kind of a quiz program for kids, educational sort of thing. And they used to have a little skit. And I had a husky voice even then. So I wanted to do the ingenue. That was my big dream. And I'd end up, because I did speak foreign languages, doing the French, little French maid, or I'll be a little foreign child or something. Never got to be the ingenue, but that was my beginning. And then I worked at the same time in a little radio stock company in Oakland. And they had a lot of the big name bands came through, and we used to do the True Detective mysteries. And we had bands like Forrest Tucker came through, Kay Kaiser, they'd come through, and then we'd come on with our True Detective troupe and do the stories. And then I worked in radio, Pat Novak, Are These Our Children, which was a children's delinquency series on ABC. Mm-hmm. National TV, radio, I won't say TV. But what I started to say is, as far as getting into the really children's thing, they had an audition at NBC in San Francisco. They were looking for a foil, a little teenager, to play the part of a girlfriend for Charlie McCarthy with Edgar Bergen. And I remember standing in that, I was pretty young, in that NBC hallway for about 4 hours till I got on. I think the whole world was auditioning. And Murray Bolan, at that time, was the producer of the show. And Murray was there representing the agency producers with J. Walter Thompson. And after I did my thing, I went away and waited. All of a sudden, they came out and they said, "You got it. You're it." And I was so thrilled. They gave me a big party. Oh, I was going to go to Hollywood. I was, need I say more, they changed ad agencies. I did one show in San Francisco at the Marines Memorial Theater, a radio national, as the little foil of Charlie having fun and all this. The party came, but the agency left. They switched agencies, and lo and behold, we have Francis Langford and Don Ameche and the Bickersons. And it was nice while it lasted. So I even borrowed the money. I didn't have the money, and my mother was against my coming down here because I was pretty young. So I borrowed from a producer. I knew her, and I came down with an excess of $25 in cash, which my mother figured should only last her a day. Well, by hardly eating, you know, we used to have the Ham and Eggers on Hollywood Boulevard. We'd go in there for 65 cents and get a meal. So I went down, I looked up Murray, and he said they were auditioning for Cinderella. And I got out there, I called a cab, my fleeting money, which was disappearing fast, and told the driver, "Oh, I've got a big audition at Disney Studios." He said, "Oh, fine, I'll take you." He did. He took me around and around and around, and a half hour too late, I arrived with hardly any money left. The cab was so expensive. I lost the audition. It was over. And I was in tears. And Larry Landsberg was there then, and he said, "Hey, wait a minute. Can you ad lib?" They didn't say improv in those days. They said ad lib. And I said, "Oh, yes." He said, "Well, I've got an engineer. I'll throw the characters out and you do the different voices." So I did every voice of every character in Cinderella. And I ad libbed for about 15 minutes. When I was done, he says, "Oh, great. And do you want me to keep talking?"
"Yes."
So then I went back to San Francisco. And 3 months went by and nothing happened. And I called. And they said, "We still haven't made up our mind, Disney Studios." So I thought, well, 6 months almost to the day, the telephone rang one Friday afternoon late, and I answered. I said, "Hello." And they said, "Lucille Bliss, can you be at Disney Studios Monday at 9 a.m? Aha. I said, what? And she says, "What hotel are you staying at?" Well, I didn't know one hotel from another, but I knew ad men stayed at something called the Hollywood Plaza, which was pretty wild in those days. So I just said, "I'll be at the Hollywood Plaza." I said, but wait a minute. What part have I got? She said, you're doing the Brooklynese, the comedy part, the wicked stepsister, Anastasia. And that's the way it happened. Mm. And I came down here and I was doing pretty, I did Droopy and the Leprechauns. I did Tom and Jerry's. I did a Waggly Tail for Warner Brothers. And oh, a lot of other things. And then at that time, my mother's, well, Waggly Tail was after, but my mother said Crusader Rabbit.
Tom and Jerry, you did a character, what, Tuffy?
Tuffy.
Yeah.
I did the one that I remember.
Who was Tuffy?
Tuffy was the little mouse who wore a diaper and a big safety pin. Mel Blanc had done some of them, and I did some of them. Mm-hmm. I remember the Cockney one was about the, I did that one I liked. That was called Robin Hoodwink.
Tuffy, isn't he the one that comes in with a little guy with a cigar?
Little guy. No, he's a little baby mouse. No, he's a little mouse. Mm-hmm. At least he didn't have a cigar in the one I he wore his diaper, though.
Yeah. I remember there was one like a gangster that always kicked his hat forward and had a cigar.
Oh, yeah. That wasn't the one. I don't know if that was Tuffy. I don't think so. Anyway, then my mother called me and said they're auditioning for something called Crusader Rabbit, a new television cartoon. Wouldn't you like to come up, come back home? And I thought, well, yeah, I'll go back. So I went back up there and I auditioned. It was in Berkeley. Alex Anderson was the creator of Crusader Rabbit, mm-hmm. as far as the artistry and the story went. And Jay Ward was his partner. Jay was the business manager and the producer. And he directed a lot of this. He directed us in many of the episodes. So anyway, when they showed me in their garage, the slides of Crusader.
He was in the garage.
Yes, in Berkeley. He had a funny little walk, and Alex said, this is my little son, he's 3 years old. He said, and see how he walks? I patterned Crusader's walk after my little boy. So I did what they thought. They told me what he should sound like. I did a voice, I didn't think about it anymore, and then I found out I got Crusader Rabbit. I became the Rabbit. I did a few other minor characters on it as well, but they wanted to keep it as, you know, that I was doing solely Crusader. But I did some of the minor characters.
When they sat down with you and they described the character of Crusader Rabbit, what did they say to you?
They said he was a nice little guy, but he had a lot of moxie. And see if I can remember. And he was a strong little person. And he was really out there crusading. He was going to make things, anything that was wrong, he was going to make it right. And he had this strive, and he was the leader. And he had to sort of keep his lovable, but kind of dumbbell rags and toe. I can't do rags, but anyway, it was a kind of duh character. And
almost
that
like
was Crusader.
In a way.
Yeah, but Bullwinkle was patterned very closely after that. Mm-hmm. In fact, I was supposed to have done Rocky, but then they found out, I mean, not found out, but Jay felt it was too close to Crusader. Am I doing Crusader? He didn't want to cross identities.
Well, Rocky is an awful lot like Crusader.
Yes, so he picked June Foray.
Yeah.
Right, it's the same, almost the same type of a situation mm-hmm. and characters. You see, that happened after Jay Ward sold Crusader Rabbit. And then he sold it to Shaul Bonsall and he had nothing. So he and Alex created Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Tell me more about Crusader Rabbit. I want to get into that a little bit.
Well, Joe Barbera.
Where did you do your first recordings?
Oh, the first ones we did on Powell Street, which is now the United Airlines building, 421 Powell, in a studio called Sound Recorders. And it was on the second floor. And we'd go in there, and at night, I was going to school at the time, we worked from 9 till 4 in the morning. And we got the grand total sum of $5 an episode.
Really?
And then it was sold to Jerry Fairbanks. You remember the name Jerry Fairbanks at NBC? He had he was affiliated with them as production, kind of a production company, I guess you'd call it. Well, Jerry picked it up. We were going network then. We, you know, really big. So we got $30 then an episode. And Jay had this huge St. Bernard dog, and he negotiated all the business. So it was like, who needs the money this week? Who has to pay their rent? Who has this? Who needs it? Because I want to take the dog back to New York. I have to see NBC in New York. And in those days, air travel was kind of too expensive, so he'd take the Pullman. And the dog, of course, had to be. The dog didn't sleep in the passenger. It went in the passenger with him. It became a passenger and traveled to New York. It was incredible. And then, well, we did it up there for 30, and then finally, it was sold down here. I can't think of the man who did it. Maybe Bill Hanna might remember.
Oh, I think
so. He and Joe Barbera worked for this man. He died since. Scandinavian guy.
Yeah, I think I have a name written down at home. Someone.
He was from Minneapolis originally. A wonderful person. And Joe and Bill were the artists on it.
Of the Crusader Rabbit?
Yes, down here. And Rags, Vern Loudon, didn't want to come down, so Dawes Butler played Rags, and Don Messick played the part that Russ Coughlin, who's general manager of ABC San Francisco.
Mm.
He played the Dudley Nightshade and all the villains. And we did 11 episodes in color down here at $56 an episode. Things were looking better. And then it was sold to a Mr. Shaul Bonsall of the Garment Jungles. No, black and white, 130 of them in black and white.
But weren't the black and white ones kind of your favorites?
Yes.
Over the color ones?
Really?
Weren't the latter ones kind of losing the energy?
Well, the energy was not when we did the 11 down here. No, the energy was lost when Shaul Bonsall bought it and took it into Mexico and took a different cast.
Mm-hmm.
He would not pay Guild. And then it was in the time of the Guild. It became, what should I say, into the, well, it was a Guild thing as far as rates and everything when it went color down here. Mm-hmm. And they paid us $56 as a buyout. But Mr. Bonsall took it back to the jungle days of $30 an episode and no residuals in Mexico.
Yes.
And under the table. And I wouldn't go, and neither
would
Coughlin.
Just like Jay Ward did later, yeah. Jay Ward did that with Bullwinkle.
Did he?
Oh, yeah, he sent it down to Mexico.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, he took it, and he had G.G. Pearson. You don't have to put that on there, but G.G. Pearson understudying me. And Bonsall said to me, what I have done, see, he made it so impossible for me. I couldn't work for 3 months in Hollywood anywhere, almost for 6 months. Hanna-Barbera wanted me to be rough in there, rough and ready, their first series as a company, HB, mm-hmm. and pay me $50,000 for 4 years. But Bonsall made so much trouble that they said legally he can't do it, but ethically he owns part of the KTLA and the Times and everything. He'll make it so tough we'll never get off the ground, honey. You're too hot to handle. I went to the Guild and one man there said, oh, I'll help you, but I didn't know what he meant. He didn't really help me. And I couldn't work. Couldn't work anywhere because I was too hot to handle. And I was so young, I didn't really know that I should have gotten an attorney and screamed.
Just because you wouldn't go to Mexico?
Well, because I wouldn't do Bonsall. See, he tied me up. He was so mad. But he tied me up long enough that when he called me finally after 3 months, he said, look, I've cut and edited the old Crusader Rabbits. I've picked out lots of your dialogue and we've put it together. We've taped it in the new, and mm-hmm. G.G. Pearson will do minor words. So it'll sound like you're still doing it. I don't need you anymore. You can work for anybody you want. I said, yeah, but you ruined me for 3 months. Now all the people have got other people. I couldn't make a living. Well, he says, all you have is a phone call. Goodbye. He hung up.
Hmm.
He was, this doesn't have to go into it. I'm just telling you.
So that was kind of a really sad note to end
It was
up.
Rotten, really rotten. And Sam to Nicholson worked with him. It was TV Spots. We're doing it down here. It was his partner. And I saw Sam recently.
Yeah, TV Spots is what I remember.
And he practically ruined Sam. Sam told me everything he had, Bonsall just destroyed him too.
So how many years was it with all that turmoil?
I would say it started in 49, but actually didn't get on the air till 50.
Yeah, but I mean, this trouble you're talking about.
The trouble started in the mid-50s.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember, about 54, 55, somewhere in there. And that lasted for about the trouble we didn't work then lasted about till they finished it. The troubled situation, and then Crusader died shortly after that as far as the strip. It lost the energy, the stories weren't funny, the characters, it just died.
Along that line, how long did that last as far as that?
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out.
The crummy ones.
Well, he did about, he did about 90 of them.
Really?
Or 60, at least 60 of them.
That's a lot. That's like almost like the bad Popeyes that were turned out.
Yeah, he did about, I think, 60. Either if it was going to go for 30, and then if it clicked 60, he might have done 30. But anyway, he might have done 60. I'm not sure. So that lasted a while, you know. And then nobody wanted to pick it up. They wanted the old ones. They didn't want the new ones.
Hmm. You sound so much like the character of Crusader Rabbit, your voice, and just when I talk to you on the phone, it's almost like I'm...
A lot of people say, oh, I know, you're Crusader Rabbit.
Well, how, do people do that? They say, you sound a lot like something?
Yeah.
I can't put my finger on. What do you sound like? Do they ever do that? They
you
can't
mean,
place who you
sometimes,
sound.
Yeah, you remind me of someone or someone, but I don't know who it is. Yes, that happens too.
Yeah.
And I say, probably it's a cousin you don't want to think of. No, 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 it's something else.
But how different? See, I know how June Foray sounds different than Rocky the Flying Squirrel, because Rocky the Flying Squirrel is still on, you know?
Yes.
But I don't see, I haven't seen Crusader Rabbits, honestly, in 10, 15 years.
And you mean to you, when I speak, I remind you of Crusader still?
Oh, yeah, I still remember Crusader.
Yes, I know that, but I mean, does my voice today make you think
yes.
of Crusader? It does.
Uh-huh.
It has some notes in it.
Well,
I didn't change
like
my
all,
voice too much.
It sounds like it all the time.
Wow. Please. That's funny.
Because, I mean, what I'm asking you is how much different than was it than the
than
way
my
you
own
sound
voice.
Now? Yes.
Well, I had to wrinkle my nose constantly to get his little voice. I had to make a wrinkle.
Really?
But it made a real deep
it's
wrinkle.
Almost
I had
what
to.
The character does
I
in
had
the cartoons.
To. See, it was, hey, Tiger, Tiger, it's me, Crusader Rabbit. And even when he was nice, he still had that little wrinkle. He was more like this. This was Crusader Rabbit. Hey, Tiger, Tiger, it's me, Crusader Rabbit. He was kind of a smaller and condensed, but very moxie little guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I loved him.
Was there a particular episode of Crusader Rabbit that sticks in your head as one of your favorites?
Not really. No, there were so many that I liked. I liked the pirates. That was a great one.
What kind of jams did they get into? Because, you see, I can't really do a lot of research on it. I really have to ask you because you're not showing them.
I tell you what, Paul, I have... And maybe I could bring them down somehow. I have 13, no, not 13. I have about 6 or 7 of the films on a video cassette.
You do?
Do you have a way of looking
no,
at it?
No, I don't have
we
a
We could
picture.
Take it over to a studio when my friend Tom Garricky comes back.
Oh,
and you could look
great.
At it then.
Yeah.
Oh,
sure.
Jerry Warren has a video.
I'd like to print some of the scripts.
I have no scripts. I never.
Well, you see,
Jay
you
wouldn't.
Can always take it down from the...
Oh, yes, and play it slow.
I'm
they
sure
were
I
given
can.
To me, I tell you, they were lent to me by Metro Media when I did some personal appearance shows in San Francisco with the understanding they could never be shown commercially.
Yes.
And I said, no, I won't ever show them commercially.
Indeed.
So
well,
what,
I can write
so what happened
okay.
is, so what happened is someone copied it, I mean, for me. This is, you get what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I understand.
The station, KPIX, Westinghouse, where I was on, mm-hmm. they said, if you want it, we'll make you a cop. Because
yes.
we had to return the original to
yes.
them. Will Metro Media
well, these
get
days,
mad?
These days, you can do that with almost any show.
You could say you took it off the television.
Sure.
But you wouldn't have taken all that off. I've got 7 episodes.
Well, I couldn't print all 7.
No, so you
but
could
I
say
can
what
just
you
pick
did.
Out
yes,
the best
fine,
and then
fine.
Write for permission.
Don't say that I gave it to you.
All right. I'll say I bought it at a collector's shop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Please, because I
sure.
don't want to get, I might
sure.
get in trouble.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, I understand.
And I don't want to get the station that did it the favor in trouble either.
Yeah, I'll write a nice letter asking for permission. And I'm sure when they see what I have.
Bob O'Connor would be the man. I wish you would call him soon because I'd like to have, he was interested in reissuing them. And then he said
they
to me, I don't know about our September schedule. I've been trying to call him today. He was in meetings. And then he said, well, I don't know. He said, I might put them on again, and then if there's enough interest, we'll do new ones. I said, I wish you would.
Yeah.
Because Jay has no more control of it. He's through. He's finished with them. He sold them. They own the rights, Metro Media. And Bob O'Connor at KTTV is the man you should be talking to.
I would like to talk with you more about that movie you did with Jim Backus and a lot of other things.
Oh, you mean Nobody's Boy, the
yeah,
more
but
recent
why don't
one?
We just... Wrap it up now.
And let's do more another
yeah.
time.
Uh-huh, and you can
fine.
Get ready.
Paul Mayer's Children's Television Archive.